Welcome back, everyone. I know you missed Alex and myself. Didn't they, Alex? Did they miss us?
They missed us.
They missed
It's
us, like,
been a
oh,
while.
it has. We delayed because I made the promise. I would bet my firstborn son that I would beat BioShock by Friday's episode, I said. Technically, I beat it by the next episode, but not by Friday's. We postponed because of me. And so, Alex, my firstborn belongs to you.
Yes,
What
yes.
are you gonna do with it?
What will I rename him is the first question. And
Will it be a him?
what will I rename it? The object. Not the child, but the thing that you're passing on to me.
Oh, that makes me sad.
No, BioShock is one of those games that doesn't have an autosave. So if you're playing it and you fall asleep, like a few people,
Like
the
some,
game.
yeah, like someone did like 4 times in the same hour-long section.
The game doesn't save, and then your PS3 automatically shuts off. So that's where we're at. Do 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 do.
Yeah, like I think autosaving has babied me. I just expected it. So when it didn't happen the first like 2 times, I'm like, come on, like it's just like why didn't that change overnight? Anyways, welcome to the Marathon Club, everyone. This is the final episode of our BioShock or BioShock 1, I guess the first BioShock game. This is part 4 of 4. We're discussing the ending. My name is Matthew Beckman. This is Alex Hart, everybody.
Olo.
Olo?
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. I did beat the game for this episode. And had a good week. How was your week, Alex?
It's been good. Played a lot of games.
A lot of games. Well, tell me about them.
Lot of games indeed. PlayStation Plus just put forth a game called The Cave, which came out like 2 or 3 months ago, and it's available, I think, on PS3 and Wii U actually. And it's basically a 2D platforming puzzle game. And I played the demo and I liked it a lot, so I got it on PlayStation Plus for free, and I've been playing it, and it's really, really, really good.
What are your favorite aspects of it? And could you compare, like, are there any other games you could say it's like, oh, it's similar to this, so if you're a fan of it.
I'm trying to think and I can't really put my finger on it. It's weird because it's 2D platforming, puzzle solving, and it's class based. So you can pick like the warrior or the hillbilly, or there's a different bunch of different characters that have their own kind of special features. And then I think at times you can have the two or three different characters playing in the same cave, and then you switch back and forth. So, I mean, I'm almost wondering if it's meant to be kind of like a co-op game, but it's just a really fun 2D puzzle solving game. And then I played Epic Mickey 2. Wait
Whoa,
for
epic.
the response. There it
Okay,
is.
sorry.
No, I was waiting for your response.
Oh, it's basically whoa, because I've heard middling things, but I want to hear your experienced argument with
Yeah, I played with my brother-in-law, and he was a pretty big fan of the first Epic Mickey, and I actually watched him play it a couple years ago, and it looked really cool. Like, it has a really strong kind of concept. I think Mickey is a cool character because you basically have the entire like classic Disney franchise at your fingertips, with Goofy and Minnie and Pluto and I don't know, like almost like a Disney world. And there's a second one that came out that he got for the Wii U that we've been playing, and you could play it as co-op. So he was playing as Mickey and I was playing as Mickey's bumbling sidekick, and you can do just like co-op 3D platforming missions. It's a really, really buggy game. Like, we were playing it, and he was telling me how the Wii U version got a pretty hastily made port from the PS3 version, and like sometimes the frame rate was like unplayably slow. Like, the game doesn't seem like it should be a finished product that retails for $60, but I mean, it's fun nonetheless.
That's always a bummer when that happens. I mean, with the whole, the frame rate issue and stuff. So what was do you know if the PS3 was that like the lead platform for development? And then
Yeah, I think so. And then they, of course, incorporated like move controls and stuff, because the original Epic Mickey launched on the Wii, I think solely on the Wii, and you would use the Wii pointer to kind of shoot paint. The whole kind of, I guess, story behind the Epic Mickey series is Mickey has these paint brushes. It's kind of like an Infamous. You can choose to play good or you can choose to play evil. It's very cut and dry, like black, white. And if you're good, you're painting things in, so you can kind of see a ghost of a platform, and you can paint it in with your paint, and then the platform is, it exists for you to jump on. or you can choose to play evil where you use thinner. So if you see something that you don't want to be there anymore, you can kind of thin it out and then use that as kind of your platforming. And the same goes for combat. You can use paint to kind of just stun somebody, or you can use thinner to actually, like, kill them.
Whoa, like, explicitly, like, they are dying in this game?
Like, it gets pretty dark if you play with thinner. Like, you know, he was telling me that in the concept design of the game, they were almost saying that if you played as Dark Mickey, the appearance of the character himself would actually turn to be more of like a rat. Like, he would just get, like, darker and darker and, like, grossier. But, like, if you play as good Mickey, then you'll look like Mickey. But then I guess they changed their minds during the production of the game and just kept him as good Mickey. Or he looks like regular Mickey the whole time. But it was okay. Like, it wasn't the best game I ever played. But
interesting.
I played it. I thought I'd give it the exposure on the Marathon Club that it needed. MP2 on the Wii U is okay.
Watch sales soar after this.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, the studio that made Epic Mickey got shut down. So.
Yeah, I saw that. And do you know the head of that studio, the guy who designed it or whatever?
I don't. I bet you do.
Yes. Well, I decided to share because Warren Spector is his name, and he was one of the lead designers on the original Deus Ex. And so that's why that game kind of was like touted as being, people were really, really excited for it. It's like, whoa, the guy who made Deus Ex is making a Mickey Mouse game. And then, yeah, it didn't really do that well. So I think he's moved on, and I think he's currently technically unemployed, but I hope somebody, I hope some studio, you know, is like, hey, come work for us and make a spiritual successor or something, just because Deus Ex is really good. He didn't work on Human Revolution, though. I should make that stipulation or something like that. That clarification, sorry.
Yeah, for sure. And then I just played, I finally finished up Ascension. I got past the Trial of Archimedes before the patch kicked in, because the patch kicked in today. So.
Yeah, I did not do that. So, but I think, as I said, I haven't played it since last Saturday. So literally, I'm in the same spot for a week. I haven't touched it, sadly. I really want to play it, though. But
yeah, I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, the patch for the Trial of Archimedes shouldn't make anything that much different. You know, it's just a gameplay difficulty patch. So, I mean, if you really want the bragging rights of defeating it without the patch, you can delete your game data and reinstall. But it doesn't really, you know, add or diminish anything from the game.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm gonna, like, no one's gonna, like, throw me a parade for beating it, you know, without the patch. So it'd be too much work.
Except for the Marathon Club's annual spring parade.
Yes, that's coming up. What is that, like a month from now?
Yeah, the Marathon Club Easter egg hunt is next Sunday.
Yeah, look for all eggs, the Final Fantasy VII themed egg hunt that we'll be having. Sorry, I'm so sorry. Oh, what else? What have you? Anything else you played?
That's been it. That's all I've played, except for maybe something else. But that's a secret.
Oh, a secret. Will I find out?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, quick question. So with Epic Mickey, just because I'm really curious. Is it a game you'd recommend, or is it one that you think you had simple fun with, but you wouldn't actually say, tell someone to go out and seek it out?
With Epic Mickey 2, I wasn't really sold on it, just because you seem to be followed around by this character this entire time, like your sidekick character. But with Epic Mickey 1, that's something that I really would like to touch on my Wii, because it looked pretty fun with, like, the you know, the Wii Motion Plus integration with the pointing at the screen, and kind of almost feels like a Mario with just fun 3D platforming with really cool, like, it's really, really cool concept art.
So it
seems to be the strongest concept wise.
But not worth, like, trying out, though? Is it?
No, I would like to try the original one. Maybe not so much the second one, though.
Oh, I was asking if you'd recommend the second one to other people.
Not really.
Okay. All right. That's enough for me to hear.
Like I said, though, I mean, it's hard because I can't tell if it was just a bad Wii U port or if the whole game's going to be that way. Because, I mean, for PS3, it could be a really solid game. But with the Wii U versions we were playing, we were coming up with some difficulties.
That's a shame.
What have you played this week?
You know, not a whole lot. I did play Bioshock, made a quick work of that today. And more or less, just more Luminace that I've been playing. I'll play a little bit before I go to bed. I think I'm just in, like, a real rut of this, you know, this neat puzzle game. I mean, I did hung out with a friend, and we dabbled in a few games. Like, you know, I did do some SSX. I think early this week, I for some reason I woke up at like 2:30 in the morning, and I just couldn't sleep. I don't know. I had no reason to wake up. But I just woke up, and I was up for like 3 hours. And instead of being like, maybe I should catch up on Bioshock, I decided to just put in SSX to kind of like soothe my soul and get in some fake snowboarding. And that's the game. SSX is one of those like infinitely replayable games that I'll like, you know, if you said, hey Matt, like take with five games, you know, to like go somewhere and bring your PlayStation with, or like, you know, if you pick five that you want to keep with you, like historically for those through your PS3's lifespan, I think SSX would make it into my top five. Not saying it's like top five favorite, but it's like a top five. Just you could always play it and just always have fun with it. So
yeah, I mean, those kind of games are always really easy to just like, even if I'm like talking with my mom on the phone, it's like I'll just plug in like Skate 3 and just like skate around town, and like it's almost like mind-numbing, like. Almost like I'm skateboarding in real life, where I'm not even like thinking about it. I can like carry on a conversation while I'm, you know, playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater Underground on my PS2 or something. Like those games are just really fun to just pick up in like free play mode.
Yeah, and I like it. And they did such a good job of kind of keeping the spirit of like the PS2 ones that I was, you know, a big fan of. So yeah, that, Luminace, and Bioshock. So another boring week of what I've played.
But don't worry, you'll be playing more games soon.
Yeah, I feel like I've got this like second wind of sorts. Maybe it's my first wind actually, since I was so sluggish with Bioshock. But I feel like I think I might be able to like, you know, clip through Bioshock 2 at a pretty quick pace.
Yeah.
And move on to bigger and better God of War Ascension type things.
And then
Infinite. Yes, we have to worry about that, because that comes out on this Tuesday already. Since we haven't done our Ascension episode, you could probably guess when our Infinite episode would be coming out a while. So apologize for that.
Infinite, however, is kind of the one thing that I'm scared about, you know, for not playing it for a while, is like the internet and how they spoil things for me.
Yeah, I'd say don't even like risk reading anything that has like a Bioshock headline. Like, just stay away from like comment sections in general, more or less.
I feel like I have to stay away from like anything, like Reddit, like.
Oh yeah, I feel like that could be a bad site. It's probably a blessing I never use that site, because I feel like that'd be like a hive for spoilers for things.
Oh goodness, it's just, and I'm like, I'm a member of like Reddit's gaming subreddit, so I just love reading about gaming news. But I think they have pretty good rules on spoilers. But like you said, just the comments, like one guy on Reddit ruined the ending of Shadow of the Colossus for me.
Yeah, it takes, you know, like just one person, just a quick comment. Like, it doesn't have to be like moderated. Like it could probably slip through in like whatever like filters people would have. I mean, I remember I've probably maybe told you personally, but I haven't said it on the podcast, but Red Dead Redemption, I was watching like a YouTube, like it was like a music video or like maybe some other video from some game, maybe like a soundtrack or something, completely unrelated, not even a Rockstar game, nothing like that. And like one of the top comments was, this is better than in Red Dead Redemption blank happens, and it was literally like the ending of the game. And I was like, you're kidding me, like this unrelated story. And then just that it took me like a full year to like come back around to like play that game, because I was like, it kills your motivation when that kind of stuff happens. So
yeah, and then when you're done with the game, you're like, why am I playing this game?
I mean, sometimes you know, the journey is better than, you know, the destination or whatever twist some game could have in store. But yeah, I'd say delete Reddit from your history until you play Infinite.
That seems impossible. But who knows? Maybe I'll beat Bioshock 2 tomorrow night, and then I'll pick up Infinite on Tuesday and play that Tuesday night.
If you beat Bioshock 2 in one night, you can just tell me what happens, because
I'm excited, you know, later in the conversation when we can start kind of picking up on some expectations that we have for Bioshock 2.
Quite. Me as well. But anyway, should we jump to our soundtrack shakedown?
Let us jump to the soundtrack shakedown.
So, Alex, soundtrack shakedown, what do you have for me and the listeners this week?
I'm afraid in the earlier segment, I wasn't 100% honest with what I played this week, Matt.
The secret.
I played a game.
Whoa.
I played a game that has great music.
Is it a pre-release copy of Bioshock Infinite?
No, that would be great. I wonder what the music would be like. No, irrelevant. The other day, I was planning on upgrading my computer to a new OS so I could play some games, but it turns out I was unable to upgrade at the time, so I dug through some of my previous Humble Bundles and picked out an indie classic that you gave a thumbs up. So this week, my soundtrack shakedown is music from Sword and Sorcery.
No way.
Faux show.
If you could see the smile on my face, everyone.
It's a good
Oh.
game. It's a really good game. And I only got through the first two missions. I mean, I'm kind of confused. It says the name of the game is Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery EP. Does that mean this is more or less kind of like a demo and the game isn't yet, or is this a full-fledged title?
I feel like it's full-fledged. I feel it's the EP designation is so they were kind of weird way of like tying it just as this like this more of like an audio visual, you know, like heavy on the music. There's a lot of, you know, like a record and like music influence or, you know, like motifs, you know, like there's like a record hanging in a sh in like that main shack and the like kind of the home area. And so yeah, it's just it's I took it as their weird way of like just kind of like being like, hey, this is kind of like a record that you're listening to, but you're playing it too. I don't know. I don't know. But
No, it's true. The gameplay isn't too like in depth. I mean, it's more or less like a 2D point and click adventure game that's really pixelated. But it's still really, really cool. You know, you're almost kind of like experiencing it. And there's some puzzle aspects too, like when you get to hold your sword up into the rainbow and then that opens the bridge and stuff. No, but yeah, my first track here is called Lone Star, and it's the second song that you kind of encounter in the game. So here is Lone Star. So that is Lone Star from Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery. The second track here is actually the fourth track on the Super Brothers soundtrack, and it is called The Prettiest Weed, and it's a little bit more rockin'. This music has a really interesting style. So here is The Prettiest Weed. That was The Prettiest Weed from Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery's point and click adventure game. Really cool music styling, wouldn't you say, Matt?
Yeah, the artist Jim Guthrie. I actually, because I think in that Humble Bundle, there's in some way I think it came with the soundtrack. So I listened to the soundtrack itself quite a bit, and I've actually like I've sought out more of Mr. Guthrie's music, and he's a good musician. He did the music for one of the sections of that, or it was I think the summer release from last year is like called Sound Shapes. It was this like
Yeah.
puzzle platformer. And so the Super Brothers guys, they designed one of the like worlds in the game, and then they also like partnered with Jim Guthrie again, and so he did the soundtrack for that. And he actually his soundtrack section actually went up for free on his like Bandcamp page like last week, so I don't know if it's still free, but yeah, big fan, and this soundtrack is so good. Oh, I'm so happy you picked this. I'm so happy you're playing it. Oh, the feelings I have right now. Can we just let's spend an episode talking about Sword and Sorcery next week, can we?
I wish. If only we didn't have so many different games to play.
Yeah.
No, but this music is really, really cool. Like, it has such a good balance of, like, you know, acoustic string instruments, like, you know, cellos, violins, along with, like, you know, synthesizers and moogs and stuff. And then my favorite part is, like, just the drum sounds. Like, it's got a full, like, acoustic drum kit in the background. And it just, like, the rawness of the drums with like the smoothness of the, you know, acoustic orchestral instruments, and then like with synth on top, like it's like three completely conflicting musical elements that fit together perfectly, and it fits the game really well. So I'm excited to let people listen to them, because yeah, it's a pretty sweet soundtrack, pretty sweet game. I'm excited to play more of it, even though I haven't finished it yet. So
I'm really excited to just kind of like hear your continuing thoughts maybe in like future episodes when you keep playing it. This is a good soundtrack shakedown, everyone.
You heard it here first. No game so far though, when you're running away from that big Minotaur man,
that's atmosphere, huh?
It creeped me out, like it really did. And I mean, like, what more can you do than just like point and click faster, you know? I don't know, I love it when games make me feel so helpless.
Yeah, with that guy in particular, it does a great job. Quick question: have you tested out the Twitter integration in that game yet?
I thought about it, and then I remembered that I was thinking about maybe starting up a new Twitter page with a more easily accessible handle. So I skipped it, but when I started the game, it said that it was encouraged for a more meaningful experience, which I was kind of confused about. Do you have anything to add in about the Twitter?
Yeah, well, I was actually. I actually started a draft for my blog, like about the idea of like why they put this Twitter mechanic in there. And I thought for a long time about this. Like, I spent hours thinking like, so what does the Twitter mechanic mean? But like literally the entire game, every line of dialogue can be tweeted. Even like you get a book where it kind of like gives descriptions or even like show specific characters' thoughts, like every single line of those thoughts, you can tweet anything in the game, which is, so it's kind of weird. You think it's like, wow, that'd probably make your followers pretty mad. But I try to take it as, you know, were they trying to, like, give a way for players to, like, reflect themselves, you know, via their Twitter, like, of, like, what their character would be thinking? I don't know. It was really interesting. But I remember I used it, and I would basically tweet kind of, like, major kind of checkpoints in the game, like major lines of dialogue. And eventually at some point when I was nearing the end of the game, I was tweeting or more of the lines, because I was like, it's like, whoa, I'm getting near the end and all these big things are happening. And then finally, like, somebody tweeted at me, they're like, what are you going on about right now? And then I was just like, this game, buy it. That's all I said. And so it's kind of weird, because if someone's not familiar with the game, they'd be like, it's all gibberish. Like, what is this? But
yeah, I agree. I don't know. Like, even whole like social media, like tweeting and stuff in general, I already know that, like, I don't have enough friends that like understand what I'm doing. So like, even for the most part, like if I share a song on Spotify, on Facebook, and they're like, hey, this is cool, check it out, it's like nobody even clicks on it. So at this point, I'm like, I don't know, like I'm more in for like the experience that I get. And then I can kind of just let people know, you know, if I think they should play the game or if I think they should listen to the album. Maybe my closest friends will check it out. But for the most part, like, I know that the majority of the people that are following me on Twitter or Facebook are just going to, like, skip over it quick. You know, like, I feel like these days the people or the things people want to see on Twitter is like, yo, just made myself a strawberry Pop-Tart. This is totally delicious, yo.
Yeah.
Instead of like, hey, check out this new Foo Fighters album that I think is really cool. Like, nobody will like even click on it.
Yeah, as far as I've seen, a lot of the people on my Twitter feed, it's like who can make the like the wittiest observation about something, you know? That's kind of what I've seen funneling down my Twitter. So, but yeah, just the idea of a game having this fully supported feature where, you know, it's literally like anytime you see something in game, if you mouse over or if you're on, you know, iPhone or something, you just touch like the top right corner and it just tweets that line under your account. And it always hashtags the sorcery. So the one neat thing is that you could click sorcery and you could almost use it as this very like vague walkthrough, because if you went to the sorcery hashtag, you could look
and have all the things people have tweeted.
Yeah, so you can start seeing, like, so if you see a line that you've recently seen in-game tweeted, and then somebody tweets, you know, keeps tweeting more lines, you can basically kind of get an idea of, like, how far you are from, like, the next big moment in-game, because there's kind of, like, three main big quest lines, I guess. And so you could kind of, like, use it as a very vague walkthrough in a weird way, which is one way you could look at it. But the actual act of tweeting still leaves much to ponder. But the developers, they have an account, a Twitter account, where they basically just tweet what they're doing in that same kind of style, like the same like written style, where it's very like esoteric and kind of off, you know, where you don't really know like what they're getting at. So they'll just tweet these in the same style as the game. So I follow that account because it's kind of like neat to, you know, hear them talking about like the Super Bowl, you know, as told by Sword and Sorcery EP. I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, well, even like the style of the way things are written in the game is kind of funny too.
Yeah, it's very like nonchalant, like, because I think, you know, you run into a character and he just says like, "I hope you're having a nice adventure," you know, and the game has these like, you know, has these grand moments where it's like, you know, you're like a you know, like Sword and Sorcery, you're like this like kind of knight, I guess, on your woeful errand to, you know, combine this, basically it's got like a Triforce knockoff. It's like their own, you know, like joking tongue-in-cheek version of like the Triforce from Legend of Zelda. So you're in this epic quest to assemble these three things, but then all the characters, yeah, they're just very kind of like laid back, and you know, they can just,
yeah,
I'm just relaxing and just chopping wood, like, I hope you're having a nice adventure out there, like, see you later.
It's like, you can go ahead and cross that bridge over there, I guess, if you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's
you know, like, what kind of writing is going on here? Like, it's funny, I don't know.
Yeah, but and the game sticks with it too, like even in kind of like some of the darker moments or in like the, you know, more serious moments, it still keeps that tone. So in that way, like the writing's fairly cohesive, and so I kind of give it points for that. But
that's cool.
I should just buy to my iPhone and like start playing while we're recording. Can I do that?
Is it on iOS now?
Yeah, that's what it debuted on, and I think yeah, so it's been out. It came out like 2 years ago. So actually, very timely. It's a 2 year anniversary of the game coming out. It was like this week, I think. So I think it's discounted on iOS right now, if people are interested.
I might actually be interested in doing that, because I can just finish it up, you know, while I'm out and about doing my stuff.
Yeah, like it's a game that I'd be comfortable buying a second time, to just because I think it fits the iOS platform better, because just the way it's designed. But obviously the PC, like the computer port, you know, is really well done, so it works there really well as well. But
cool. Well, I'd say that's a mighty successful soundtrack shakedown.
I will agree with you there.
Let us head to Rapture. So Matt, here at BioShock, is the ending all that it's cracked up to be?
I'll just dive right into it. No, this ending is up there in some of my least favorites, where like a game has dropped the ball so spectacularly. It's up there with like Arkham Asylum for like really good game with a really awful ending.
Okay, that's really interesting then. I kind of agree on the whole Arkham Asylum ending, but tell me what you didn't like. I guess we can kind of just pick up where we left off in the last episode. What are we doing? This playthrough is pretty quick. You know, it's only about an hour or so.
Yeah, so, you know, the big twist from the last episode and our last playthrough is obviously Andrew Ryan revealing to you that you've been under this mental programming, and Atlas, who has been Frank Fontaine the entire game, has mentally conditioned you to basically hand over the keys of Rapture to him and kill Andrew Ryan, who is, you know, the lord and master of Rapture. And so, you know, we find that out. We find out we've been programmed to do this, and we kill Ryan, and we find out the Alice is Fontaine thing. And then we kind of escape from the situation, and because Fontaine basically kind of takes over once Andrew Ryan's dead, and he starts sending like splicers or something to kill you, and you escape with some little sisters, and you wake up in this like Tenenbaum's hideout, and she's kind of the I guess she'd be like kind of the steward of the little sisters. She's been taking care of them in this secret hideout. And so she's kind of done some work to take away this mental programming. But there are some audio diaries that we've been speaking about, and they kind of detail a little bit more, and you kind of find out. And you said this last episode too, Alex, so kind of refresh. But we find out that our player character, I think his name's Jack, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
He's Andrew Ryan's son, and he was actually born in Rapture, but the thing is, he's in this like accelerated aging. So I think they say at like the age of like two, he has like he weighs and has like the musculature of a 19-year-old. And so you find out that it actually you were born not too long ago. So like the character is probably, you know, looks visually in his like late 20s or early 30s or something, but you're only probably, I don't know, maybe like 5 to 10 years old or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also find out there's like a quick flashback that Would You Kindly package actually had a gun in it, and it's, you know, basically told us, would you kindly take over this airplane that the game starts in. So we find out you hijack the airplane and crash it right over Rapture. So that's why we ended up here. So it's a lot of revelations come, and I feel like this is like, you know, obviously the strongest part of the game. You know, the would you kindly bit is just inspired. You know, it's one of the best twists games have had in a long time, mm-hmm. or ever, I'd say. And then I feel like then it starts. This is where it starts to fall apart, though, because, you know, the mystery's gone. Your objective becomes very clear. It's just, you know, Fontaine's a bad guy. Like, go get him. And he kind of becomes. He's not as good of a villain as you know the first half with Andrew Ryan. Like he's much more comic booky. I feel kind of just like ha ha ha. You're a jerk. You'll never get me. Ha ha ha. Like just kind of like he's almost more juvenile because Andrew Ryan was never. He's the antagonist, but he was never just basically calling you an idiot or, you know, just he was more so just, you know, just threatening because he wasn't so direct with you. I don't know. But Fontaine is just kind of yelling at you and saying, like, you'll never stop me. I'm so powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the idea of Andrew Ryan being just much more menacing and, I don't know, almost like it was just cool to see Andrew Ryan's vision of what he had and then what it became. Yeah, the final fight with Fontaine, I don't know. It's pretty cheesy, I think.
Yeah, and I guess to kind of go back to just Arkham Asylum for a quick second, because the comparisons here just I feel pretty similar is that, you know, in Arkham Asylum, you know if anyone's been alive for the past like 50 years, they know that Batman fights the Joker. That's his antagonist, and mm-hmm. the Joker isn't a physically imposing guy, so. I remember playing that game wondering, like, how are they going to do this? How? Because, you know, a boss fight with the Joker just wouldn't make sense because we know that Batman physically would wipe the floor with him. So how are they going to show the Joker's prowess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And their solution was a very video gamey one. Like, every Final Fantasy and every Resident Evil game has done for the past, like, 20 years is like, oh, we'll just make them into a giant, like, rhinoceros tree elephant mutation. And then they'll just, and like, you know, all of a sudden they'll just take some virus and boom, they'll fight you. And so that's what they did, and that's kind of what happens here. So you have Fontaine, who has like orchestrated this pretty cool plan, this mental programming. So there's a lot of neat stuff there, and it boils down to him basically just splicing, because we find out he's never spliced plasmids himself until basically the end of the game. He just starts splicing like crazy, and then when we finally come face to face with him, we can kindly, like, you know, trade blows. He is just a giant, like, freak of nature. He's kind of like the Joker in Arkham Asylum. He's this big muscle, like 8 foot tall dude, and, you know, it's kind of like he's almost like the first boss fight in any other game where it's, you know, like dodge when he charges past you and shoot into his back. I mean, that's the long and short of it. It's just really a bummer because the game in all of their aspects is just stellar, and just, you know, the writing and just the setup and the scenario, and just it just falls short, I feel, spectacularly in this final act. And I don't know, I mean I still had fun because, you know, at this point the gameplay has opened up the most. You know, you have more plasmids than you ever did before at your disposal and a lot more like neat options, but your motivations just become really boiled down. But there are some neat, I guess, nuggets that are found in this last stretch. Did you find anything neat while you were progressing around? Here's a question. Did you kill Sandra Cohen?
I did.
Ah, so I killed him my first playthrough way back when, and then this time through I didn't. And you can actually go into his apartment, wherever, like, you know, in this residential area you're in, you'll have access to it if he's alive. And so I hadn't seen this the first time. You walk in and there's two splicers that are just dancing. And Sandra Cohen is like, it's like, come in, little moth, flap your wings.
That's you know? Terrifying.
Yeah, he's a creepy guy. I love that voice actor and his dialogue. But he invites you in, and so you still don't see him yet. But then you have these two people that are, these two splicers that are dancing to music, and he does this great thing where he's speaking all softly, and then he slowly gets like really angry. It's like, and don't you dare mess up their rhythm or something.
Jeez.
And so you kind of loot the apartment. Just that's what you do. And then, you're kind of sitting there and like nothing's happening and these splicers are just kind of stuck in their dancing loop. So I'm like, there's a piano. So I'm like, well, I'll go play a piano. So I walk up to it and press X to do it. And I guess that was enough to throw off the rhythm. And so then they start freaking out and start attacking me. So then I kill them both. And then Sandra's like, you don't know anything. I'll come down and show you how to dance. And then he comes down and then you kill him because he's throwing fire at you. And then you can go into his bedroom, and it kind of looks a lot like his theater with all like these kind of these plaster statues. But the horrifying thing was that his bedroom is like lined with these plaster statues. So I think just like two kind of flanking each side. Mm-hmm. And when you walk up to a body in game, like a corpse, it'll say like corpse, and you want to like loot it. And you find out that these like statues that are standing up, they're actually like plastered corpses that he's like basically frozen in a standing position. And so, like, all of a sudden I got really creeped out just thinking, like, oh, my God, like, I think all those bodies that you see throughout, like, the Sandra Cohen, like that theater section.
Mm-hmm. Those are all real people.
Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, that retroactively made, like that entire part of the game, like, a lot more haunting than it originally thought it was. Because then, you hit one with a wrench and you get, like, the blood splatter. And then in his bathroom, he's got one of those dead plastered bodies, like, just sitting in his bathtub. And I'm like, oh, this is, like, super haunting. Like, it's the most like not in your face, but kind of just the gradual like sickening feeling you get. So that's really neat. Having some kind of follow-up to killing him or not killing him.
Yeah. I think Sandra is definitely probably the best character in the game.
Yeah,
if I could choose like my favorite personality.
Yeah, I think just the way he says his lines and like he gets like a whole like level dedicated to just him more or less.
Yeah, and that part too ends up just being like my favorite part of the game where he kind of just creepily wants you to go along and find these people and murder them and then take their pictures so he can put them up on his wall for his own vanity. Like, I don't think any other character really like progresses at all in the game. Like, we meet Tannenbaum a couple times. And she basically just saves little sisters. And then Andrew Ryan, we just see him the once. But Sandra Cohen's probably the biggest character that you actually have interactions with.
Yeah, that's true. Because, I still do like Andrew Ryan as a villain. Just, I kind of sit on like the first or second episode just because, yeah, he's always present, but he's never there. But yeah, mm-hmm. Sandra, yeah, like you said, just being able to like, you have the opportunity to like see him more than once in game, which is, it almost kind of makes me think it's kind of crazy to think that BioShock, for all its narrative appraisals it gets and all these things, you realize that there aren't many characters that you don't kill that you see. Mm-hmm. It's almost kind of like we've said about God of War. Like, if you see a character on screen, chances are they're dead within like the game's running time. Mm-hmm. And like BioShock, that holds true too. I didn't like really remember it that way. I thought it's like, oh yeah, that game has a kind of a whole cast of characters that you see and interact with, but not really, because even Tenenbaum, you only see her and she's like a silhouette, and that's the one time you see her twice actually, my mistake. Yeah. But she's always out of reach, so yeah, it's interesting how this game kind of handles its cast of characters and how they all basically die by the end of it. And that's the one thing I'm really interested about BioShock 2, is not to jump too far ahead, but I feel like what Rapture is, like Andrew Ryan and Ryan versus Fontaine struggle is such a huge part of it. So to lose like those two driving forces, and I'm sure they could come up with a supplement for like, Cohen for like, some crazy, really eclectic character. But, with that main conflict gone, I'm like, where can BioShock 2 go? That's a mystery, but I don't want to jump too far ahead. But what else did you see in this last playthrough aside from, the boss fight? Did anything else like strike you as interesting or neat in any way?
The final part when you are basically a big daddy and you follow around the little sister and the like the not protection mission, but escort mission.
Oh, yep.
You basically have to make sure that the little sister you're leading stays alive as the splicers try to attack her. And if she dies, you don't have to restart. You can go and go to like a different, like a little sister hole kind of, and they just kind of crawl out and you can keep going. But I know we had talked about this earlier, but I'm almost wondering if Bioshock 2 is going to be a lot of these type escort missions.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like since I was playing on easy, I almost didn't mind it that much because it was kind of a breeze to get through because it's like, all right, hack a turret and just fire all this grenade launcher ammunition that I haven't been using all game.
Yep.
But yeah, I think, but if it was the entire game revolved around that mechanic, I'd get tired of it. But it did introduce a really cool scene where that other Big Daddy, that bouncer, crashes through the wall and tries to kill you because you've got his little sister. I thought that was neat to just kind of get like a bit of a scripted sequence and seeing a Big Daddy antagonize you for the first time, actually, you know, proactively.
Yeah, and it's cool too when you are a Big Daddy, the splicers won't try and hurt you.
I didn't notice that until well after I'd always just kill him on sight at this point in the game. I'm just kind of like, yeah, nothing can stop me. And eventually I walked past one. I'm like, wait, is this a glitch? And then I walked past a few more. And I'm like, they didn't attack Big Daddies, did they? It took me a while to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
One thing that, you know, this is like a nitpicking thing here, but it bugged me how after you get the whole Big Daddy suit on, your hands were still just... you're still wearing your sweater and your hands were still exposed. I was hoping to get some Big Daddy gloves, you know, like being the actual diving suit.
Yeah, that'll be you're nitpicking at details here, man.
I know, but it really bugged me because I mean, like, they even change your perspective because I mean, once you get that helmet on, you have that you know, narrow field of vision. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, of course they're gonna like have like new hand textures because it just struck me as weird because in my head I'm thinking, all right, so the guy I am, he's wearing these big clunky boots and this big diving suit and this helmet. Oh, but it's like a sleeveless diving suit in my head. That's all I could envision was like this like sleeveless diving suit Big Daddy running around with like very thin arms.
Or more or less, he just has like the helmet on and he's wearing like shorts and a wife beater.
it's my day off. I'm not even supposed to be here.
Yeah. Let's kind of talk about the endings with the little sisters. Do you want to take point on that?
Sure. I almost regret now not harvesting all the little sisters just so I could have seen what would have been different. But you know, I saved again. And I know you probably did too as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So with the little sisters, I mean, you save them, and I wonder. Actually, maybe you know this too. So you save all the little sisters and you do the Fontaine fight, and he kind of like knocks you back after you've done the last like drain of his atom, you know, basically the last quarter of the boss fight, you know, it's over. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, you know, you're back in a cutscene mode again. This is like the third time it's happened in game, like aside from the beginning. And he's walking over and he's like, I made you. I'm going to punch you to death, you jerk. And then the little sisters come out in like this like swarm and they just like needle him to death. It's like... Mm-hmm. It's kind of a satisfying cutscene and also to kind of fit the whole game, like kind of haunting in a very not in your face kind of way. Well, maybe in this case it is, but yeah, so the little sisters kind of basically save the day. They basically start just sticking their little atom draining needles into Fontaine repeatedly. They're just like, they're stabbing him and you can hear the little sisters, you know, yelling like kill him in their little voices. And it's just very creepy. And then to think that you go on to any of the cutscene where you realize you go on to like kind of save their lives. You take them out of Rapture and you basically let them into the real world. And then the whole epilogue is, I think, Tenenbaum kind of narrating and saying, you know, like you gave them a chance to learn, to love and to live. And it shows the little sister hand, you know, grabbing a diploma, like, you know, getting a ring, you know, somebody proposing to them, putting a ring on their finger and then, you know, grabbing like their child's hand. And then it ends with Tenenbaum saying like, and what did you get out of this? And then it shows like several little sister hands grabbing this tattooed hand that has a chain on the wrist, which we've seen all game. That's our player character. He's the chains tattooed on his wrist. All these little sister hands kind of grasp him. And then Tenenbaum's like, you know, you got a family out of it. And you're like, oh, that's heartwarming. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's not a bad ending. It's just kind of like a good heartwarming ending. I mean, doesn't really challenge you in any way. Like, you know, the entire game did previously.
Well, yeah, and even it doesn't really offer I don't know, like I know in BioShock 2 we play as a Big Daddy. Are we Jack as the Big Daddy, or are we a completely different character?
I would heavily, I'd like 95% assume probably not the same character. I think it's probably just some random Big Daddy that we'll probably, you know, find more out more about. But assuming how that epilogue goes, where they show Jack, you know, going into old age and dying peacefully and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
I'd assume he's probably done with Rapture. Because I would never go back if I was him. I remember watching the bad ending on YouTube, probably like when I beat this game, you know, like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, what happens? I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Someone who's done the bad ending, they'll probably correct me. But if I recall, I think it just kind of shows like a bunch of splicers like coming to the surface. So like splicers escaping Rapture and just like kind of going crazy on the surface for a second. Or it's, you know, it's kind of like, splicers, and it's just cuts to black and like that's it. We'll post it with our show post or something like that. I feel like the endings are just, they're serviceable, you know, they're just, it wraps up the story, but it doesn't give you a lot to chew on after the fact, I feel. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Especially since these are pretty much cut and dry, black and white, like we talked about. You get one really good ending and you get one really bad ending.
Yeah, that's true. It's just that whole problem with that, you know, that black and white morality we kind of joked about. Just, you know, you saved them and you gave them lives and love, or the splicers escape and literally kill the entire Earth, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's talk more about the Fontaine boss fight, just because, I mean, what was your experience with it? Maybe the first time and now the second time that you were aware of it, because the first time I feel like I was expecting more, I guess, you know.
The first time I just kind of like tried to shoot him with everything that I had, and I ended up just running out of ammo just because I didn't have enough. And then I the second time I ended up using my telekinesis power for the majority of it.
Ooh, how did that come into play?
You there's a bunch of gasoline tanks and big CO2 tanks and stuff that if you just tap it, it'll just suck the closest one to your hand, and that just like shredded him down.
Okay, that's more thoughtful strategy. I just use my guns and done.
Well, especially since we were both playing on easy too, it just went way too fast.
Oh yeah, it was like one machine gun clip went through like, you know, two sections of the boss fight basically.
Yeah,
it was I almost should like, I don't know, go back and like bump it up to normal at least just to like maybe see if I'd like enjoy it a little bit more if I had it. But I mean, the first time I played it on hard, and it was still the same process. It just took less time, but I did the exact same thing, just kind of like dodge and let them sprint by me, like, you know, like the first boss in Spider-Man for 64, you know,
the Rhino.
Yeah, the Rhino, where he just runs by and like, you know, charges. It's just that whole very basic. But you know, I guess the entire game didn't really have boss fights, so I mean, maybe it could be kind of forgiven in that regard, where, you know, that probably wasn't what they were focusing on. So, it still stinks, but in the context of the game where there are no boss fights, yeah, I mean, you know,
not the most dynamic.
Yeah, for me, I'm more let down by the story ending than I am by the gameplay ending, because, I mean,
absolutely. I mean, I wasn't really holding the gameplay up on a high pedestal in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But there are some, I mean, like, the gameplay, I mean, as I think every episode I've come to appreciate it more and more, like, trying out the different ammo types, because the crossbow gets this trap line bolt, and it shoots out a bolt, and then it basically lays one of those electric wires. And so you can do kind of a lot of neat things with those, where you can, like, you shoot that out, and then one, you know, you could just leave it as a trap where, you know, other splicers come through. So if you kill the first one, you know, the next one will get shocked. But you can also then like suck it up with your telekinesis and then like kind of shoot that into the next person too. So you can get like a twofer out of it. So I had a lot of fun with the crossbow, and I feel like the crossbow, you know, it's like a long distance shotgun, just the way it knocks back splicers, just with such force. It was really fun to hit like spider splicers in the ceiling, you know, and just, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, I'm coming for you. And then, that was one of the, like, you know, like I said, like in Kills, you know, we're talking about Killzone 2, it feels good to shoot people. Like, it felt good to shoot people with the crossbow in this game. Like, I love that aspect so much.
For sure. And if you get them in the head too, it's pretty much an instant kill.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, too, just with the combat, I mean, it even, like, gave you some more situations. And I guess this is before the Andrew Ryan twist, but when you're in Hephaestus and you're kind of releasing this valve to, like, let this lava in so you can put the bomb in. Basically, you're just twisting this valve and, like, splicers are coming to attack you while you're doing it. And during that time, you can hack two turrets on your side to kind of cover you. But then Atlas at the time, he says, like, you might want to set up a perimeter boil. And so what I did is I, with my proximity mines, with like the grenade launcher thing, I basically, on each row, I set up three proximity mines kind of spaced out so that as splicers would come in, like, they wouldn't do a chain reaction. So it'd kind of like one wave would come in, the proximity would blow up, and the turrets would kind of mop up. And so I was able to do that without even taking my hand off the wheel crank. I was able to just, like, do it and just watch the splicers on both sides of the screen just kind of, like, march in on a conga line and blow up each time.
That's impressive.
Yeah, so there's like a few more, you know, like, not scripted scenarios, but, like, you know, heavily set up in a way to kind of be like, you know, consider, you know, where they were definitely, I feel, kind of like hinting at, hey, try maybe some different strategies here, because the, you know, they're saying, like, hey, splicers are coming. So it gives you an opportunity to, like, kind of premeditate and think, like, how am I going to tackle this combat situation? And this game didn't have a ton of those prior to this. So, I, you know, there's a few moments like that, and then the, kind of the twilight hours of the campaign, or twilight minutes, I guess, of the campaign.
Yeah. Another thing, like, gameplay wise that I really liked in BioShock is that each character had their own health meter above their head. So, like, if you ever were in kind of a sticky situation, it at least gave you the choice of, like, priority. Like, I'm going to take down this guy first and then this guy. And playing that almost made me think, like, how cool it would be to kind of have those in, like, a God of War game or something.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, because you're right. It gives you an opportunity to prioritize. I feel like God of War, especially with Ascension, would be, like, so frantic. I don't know if I could, like, keep track of it that well.
That's a good point. But I know that in, like, the multiplayer of God of War, each character does have a health bar above them.
Yes. Oh, man. I remember, you know, I've only done the beta. We're kind of jumping off topic here, but have you done any of the multiplayer since you've had Ascension?
Not since I've purchased it, no. I'm waiting for you.
Okay. All right. Anyways, you know, it's hard for Alex and I to contain our enthusiasm for God of War. I mean, we spent a month of our lives talking about it on a podcast. But anyways, with BioShock, I just feel that's one thing I'm with Infinite, especially since, you know, it's kind of like Irrational Games and Ken Levine, you know, back on point with Infinite. I'm just really hoping to see. It's like I feel like they probably were aware of maybe kind of like the narrative failings of the ending. So I'm hoping that I feel like with Infinite, they're gonna kind of come out like, you know, like swinging on this one, because I mean, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but has this been all they've been working on since the first BioShock?
Yeah, Ken Levine has been working on Infinite since the first BioShock game.
Okay, yeah, so that alone kind of, like, makes me really excited, because, I mean, obviously, this game's been in development in a long time, which doesn't always necessarily translate to a good game, but I feel like it will.
It can't hurt. I mean, with all these games that are being made in 10 or 11 months, like all these Assassin's Creeds and stuff that are made in-house in all these studios every year, games that have taken a long time, be it, like, you know, StarCraft 2, or I'm trying to think.
Half-Life 2.
Games that have taken, you know, I think StarCraft 2 took 8 or 9 years in development, and that's only gotten, you know, glowing reviews. Yeah. So from what I've seen, I haven't read anything about BioShock, but just the ads that pop up on every website ever say, you know, 9.5 out of 10, 9.6 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 4 out of 5, you know, all these different ratings. So I think it's going to be a pretty popular game.
Yeah, I'm interested, though, to, like, you know, like, see, I don't want to read reviews, but I do, because I feel like this game would be destined to get, you know, in the nines no matter how good it is at all. I mean, unless it was a complete turd, like,
yeah. Well, that's just how video game reviews work now, too. Is, I mean, you can only wonder how much money studios are paying IGN or G4 to give them good reviews.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of, like, outlets, you know, actually, like, you know, get money for reviews, but specifically in this case with IGN, with their exclusive review where they got it up before the embargo lifted. I mean, because I think I saw Adam Sessler, he was tweeting that he can't put his review up, and I'm assuming most others, they probably can't go up until this Monday, or, you know, I guess today when this episode goes up. Mm-hmm. Is when other reviews can finally start going up. So the IGN review just smacks of just, I don't know,
exclusivity.
Yeah, I just that is like the worst thing. So I didn't even read the review, and
No, I didn't.
because I mean, like, what are they gonna say? They're not actually gonna like criticize the game that 2K has, has paid money for them to review before everyone else. Like, it's gonna be like a 9-point-something game, and obviously it wouldn't be 10, because imagine the backlash if IGN got an exclusive review and gave it a 10.
I one thing I did, I clicked it and I scrolled to the bottom. I saw what they gave it and then I scrolled back up. I didn't read anything. It looked really pretty though. It
Oh, I
was
mean,
a good looking review.
oh yeah. Well, yeah. I will say, IGN's like their layouts are they're flashy. They have like the coolest like layout review, I think, of most any publication I visit. I mean, polygons, those are pretty flashy too. But like, I usually go to Destructoid a lot, but their reviews are just, like, I'm just talking purely in terms of layout. Like, IGN's really they're really dialed in there. They look good.
Faux show.
Yeah. I mean, so what else can we say about BioShock? I feel, aside from just like kind of just continually pooping on the ending.
Don't poop on it. I think it's I think it'd be good to make some predictions on BioShock 2 before we get started.
BioShock 2. I mean, like I said, I mean, I read a few previews back when that game was coming out, and now my memory is so terrible. I've lost about all the details. I know that there's an like kind of a replacement for Big Daddy's in a way, for like a persistent antagonist in the game, which I'm excited to see, gameplay wise. Story wise though, like, I'm in the dark, and I really can't I literally can't think of like where they could take it, 'cause where it wouldn't feel forced, because Rapture, like, as an environment, to me felt it was like built upon the story idea of Ryan versus Fontaine, 'cause like, I mean, there's a lot of like nondescript hallways and stuff, but the actual like overall locations, you think like, okay, Arcadia, like these trees, and like and then like they give the characters, so it's like this person who, like Font like, or Ryan allowed this to happen, these trees, and you kind of find out why they're there to like supply the oxygen, and then Ryan burns them down, and Sanders Theater, like that's all, like that theater is like designed around like his character, kind of, it's very like this character based thing. And like Hephaestus and Ryan Industries, like, you see this all this artwork of, like the like Ryan Industries, and like this picture of someone holding up a globe, which is kind of weird because that's like kind of Atlas imagery, Greek mythology imagery, I guess. Or like almost kind of reminded me of like that 1930s movie, Metropolis. Have you heard of that or seen it, Alex?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's kind of like considered to be like kind of one of the first, probably the first sci-fi movie ever. But there's like some like pretty powerful imagery of, like factory scenes in that. And I feel like BioShock might have pulled some of that imagery, because it felt very reminiscent. Especially, I think, when you first walk into Hephaestus, there's one scene that almost looks kind of like a they like reimagined a still of the movie as your entrance into Hephaestus. But yeah, I mean, so much of the environment was built around these characters specifically. So I feel like in all these, most of these characters died, and so, BioShock 2 is going to have to introduce a new set of characters that we're going to have to hope are as endearing, and that can like sustain environments built around like these characters and what they do. I mean, so yeah, it's kind of like a changing of the guard. Like, it's I feel like, it's going to like really kind of like live or die on the writing and the characters. And we've heard the middling reviews, but I feel like they can't be trusted, because BioShock was such a landmark game. Like, anything in comparison is going to stink. Like, Final Fantasy VIII, like that game was doomed to fail because 7 was so big. Resident Evil 5, anytime some game comes out that's like a big game changer, the sequel could be proven to be empirically a better game, and it wouldn't matter, because there's just this hive mind mentality where like these games get built up, and people would dare never, speak ill or say it's better than the predecessor. Like, even like Portal 2, I feel, got like glowing reviews, but I don't think I've heard many people like definitively say Portal 2 was better than the first Portal. And I'm not making an argument if it was or it wasn't, but it'd be interesting just to hear more people have more varied opinions, because I feel like we get told to like what we like,
Yeah,
and then we
absolutely.
do,
And
because
these games get put up so high on a pedestal too, you know, they become like otherworldly. Like you just can't touch it almost. And I kind of worry about that with a BioShock Infinite too, 'cause then I mean, what if they do a spin-off of BioShock Infinite in Columbia and then everyone's like, "Oh, this game's gonna be crap. I wonder what Ken Levine's working on now," you know.
Yeah. And
People are always looking towards the next thing even when they finish it. But hopefully with Bioshock Infinite, it'll give us something to chew on for quite a while.
Yeah, it's interesting, the idea of, like, yeah, games being put on pedestals. Because I feel like Final Fantasy VI, there's one where that's kind of, like, that's been built up, you know, kind of after the fact as, like, you know, like the best RPG ever made. And so when I finally play it in, like, 2010, I don't think I would have been, I was, like, mentally capable of disliking it, because I feel like I'm supposed to like this game, and if I don't like it, I'm an idiot. Like, I have to like it, you know? And I feel, you know, that's the mentality that people, you know, went into, like, Bioshock 2 with. Like, you know, like, oh, Bioshock was really good. Like, how are they going to top it? How are they going to top it? You know, I mean, it's always a shame. You know, I feel like Fallout New Vegas and Bioshock 2 could almost, you know, kind of, like, fall in the same vein together. You know, Fallout 3 is this, you know, big thing. It changes how people, like, oh, like, action RPGs, these are neat. And then Fallout New Vegas comes along, and to me, I thought it was the better game, but since it wasn't the one that made the changes, since it wasn't the pioneer, it didn't, like, people are like, oh, like, I have a friend, you know, he's a big fan of Fallout 3, and when I'd finished Fallout New Vegas this summer, I was, you know, talking to him about it. I'm like, hey, it's, like, really good. Like, I love Fallout 3, and I mean, I really love New Vegas. You should try it out. And he's like, yeah, I played it for, like, 2 hours. It was terrible. And I'm thinking, like, but, like, the games are so similar. Like, how could you love one for 60 hours and say the other one sucks for playing it for two? Like, that's mind-blowing. And it's I think it's just this Atlas mind control we're all under. Like, would you kindly love Fallout 3 the most?
Yeah, would you kindly not talk about Bioshock 2, I think, is what more people are talking about.
Yeah.
I've actually heard, though, that, I mean, just from some reviews I read online, that people think Bioshock 2 is said to have a more enticing story, which has me perplexed.
I can't wait. I can't wait to, because, I mean, like, I feel like you and I both, we weren't caught on that Bioshock wave of loving it, so I feel like we might have a better opportunity to kind of, like, stack these games up on their own merits, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. But the interesting part is, by the time Bioshock 1 was relaunched for the PS3, it was a couple years after the initial release. It was Xbox 360 and PC only. Mm-hmm. And I picked it up on PS3, and by the time I had finished it, in that exact same week, the teaser trailer for Bioshock 2 was out. Mm-hmm. And I was so, like, in, like, the Bioshock mode. I was like, no way, Bioshock 2, this is going to be so great. And then, you know, like, 2 or 3 years later, by the time it launched, like, I just didn't care anymore.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, you know, sustain that enthusiasm, like, when games are announced too early. That's always a problem, I feel.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know, something about exploring a new world, I just didn't feel like I needed to go back to Rapture. I felt like I found comfort in leaving, just because, you know, I explored it, I spent my time in there, and then I was done. So, I don't know. That's why I'm excited to explore Columbia in Bioshock Infinite, because it's a new place.
Yep. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Yeah, Bioshock 2 and Infinite, I feel like they both just, both what they, like, what they're going to do in relation to the first Bioshock, I'm just really curious to see, you know, how they both stack up to each other, to Bioshock 1, and, you know, oh, man, it's excited. I can't wait to play through these next two.
Yeah, just to see if they have any sort of changes. I feel like with God of War, there were small changes in the series based on the console titles. But I don't know. I feel like with Bioshock, it could be repetitive and it could be altogether different.
Yeah, I think Bioshock will be a little bit more of a refreshing beast as opposed to God of War. Because God of War, those changes are all, like, nuances that you and I are familiar with because we play all the games, and we're like, oh, wait, block is now this, you know, or like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
like, this animation is slightly different. You know, that's what we take note of, and that's what we spend an entire episode talking about. the rolling!
What if a plasmid in Bioshock 2 is Medusa's gaze?
I will turn the game console off, and I will just say, hey, I'll catch up with you on Bioshock Infinite, Alex.
I'm out. It would be cool to freeze people to stone and then shoot them with the crossbow.
There needs to be a crossbow in Bioshock 2 and Infinite, because that is my favorite weapon by a mile.
It was your favorite weapon in Dishonored too, wasn't it?
I mean,
what weapon? There were weapons in Dishonored. Is what you have to say?
You know, I actually remember when we were talking about Dishonored, I think I said I didn't fire a shot. I did technically fire some crossbow sleeping darts. I think I fired probably like 3 or 4 of the entire game. So it's a good weapon.
it gets the job done.
Yeah, my favorite weapon in Dishonored were my hands.
Oh boy. Well, do you have a point for BioShock 2, what we're going to play till, Matt?
We'll be playing up to the Atlantic Express. I think that'll be a good place to stop at. I don't think it'll be a huge section, but again, kind of like this with BioShock, we're going off of the IGN's official walkthrough, so we're kind of going off their headings they have. So I'd say once you get to either Ryan's Amusements when you first see that area, or once you finish the Atlantic Express, somewhere in that transition area, I'd say save there and call it quits for the Friday episode.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting experience. This is the very first game in the Marathon Club out of how many games? Have we finished six games?
Six games now, yes.
This is the first one that neither of us have played.
Yeah, that alone is going to be, I think, yield the most interesting conversations, and just us being kind of like wallowing and just being lost, you know, like how do we navigate through this conversation?
It's going to be hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, so we'll be doing that on Friday. You know, we were hoping to have Dietz on, but he's a bit busy. But he might try to join us again. I don't know if he'd be playing BioShock 2, but it'd be interesting just to hear his thoughts on the first BioShock. But I'm thinking he'll probably definitely be on for our Infinite episode.
Yeah, for sure.
And Alex, he told me that he I think he finished Revenge of the or no Heart of the Swarm.
He finished it?
I think he finished it.
So jealous.
So you guys will probably have more to talk about next time he's on, hopefully.
We can have another hour and a half long "What have you been playing?" section.
Yeah, that was I do enjoy that though. It's, you know,
That's good.
it's neat to talk about, you know, other games in a little bit more detail that aren't being marathoned.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, well, so we'll see you guys on Friday, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, is it okay if I have an honorable mention play us out?
Oh, yes. May I ask?
This is something I want to try and start doing. Instead of having a soundtrack shakedown song play us out, I want to have one that you personally sent me. And I've been watching a lot of Batman, the animated series. And you sent me the main theme from Batman: Mask of the Phantasm. So is it cool if we let that play us out?
I would never deny that song, so of course.
Ah, so good. Enjoy.